Hi, this is Documentary First, the deep dive, where I take an insight from a recent podcast of the Documentary First and plummet's depths to see what gold we can bring to the surface. I'm Kristen Taylor. Let's dive in. Now, I recently had a conversation with Emmy Award-winning Charles Oliver. He's an editor, and he's cut some of the biggest documentaries of the last decade, including The Jinx, The Redeem Team, and most recently, Surviving Ohio State by George Clooney, produced by HBO. We were talking about what really matters in documentary storytelling, and Charles said something that really made me go, there's something to this. He's making a really great point. This is what he said. It was something like this. People are going to watch your movie for such an infinitesimally small percentage of their life, but what they're going to do is really remember it. So you've got to think about what you want them to remember. Well, that line has really stuck with me. It's been rattling around in my head ever since because it cuts right to the heart of what we do as filmmakers, right? We obsess over every cut, like every frame, every piece of music, like every archival. But how often, truly, let's be honest, how often do we stop and ask ourselves, what do we actually want people to carry away with them when they walk out of the theater? You know, when they talk about things on the ride home or when they recall the film the next week, the next month, next year. Let me set the table for you. This is what led to that wise insight that Charles shared. We were talking about how he approaches a project, and I asked him about focusing on the story versus getting caught up in the subject matter, because that can be really tricky a lot of times, you know? In his case, he was editing a film about abuse in college athletics. It was a tough subject. And he said something really that resonated deeply with me. It was something like this, again, trying to quote him, forgive me, Charles, if I get it wrong. But he said it was something like, for me, it was always about relationships. And that, like, a bell went off of my head. And I think I said something like, you know, it's really funny because that's the way it was in my World War II storytelling. Like, everybody was always talking about the war. But what was interesting to me was the people and their relationship and how the war affected them, how everybody lived. And Charles lit up. He said, completely, yeah. And then he told me about a mentor of his, Ezra, and the conversations they would have about this very thing. Listen to what he said.
And that's what we would talk about, is that people are going to watch your movie for such an infinitesimally small percentage of their life. What they're going to do is remember it. And so you've got to think about what is it you want them to remember. And more than anything, it's about relationships or moments. And those relationships can be between two people, or that relationship can be between, like, me and you on camera. It's those human moments. The backgrounds all sort of change, but the humanity in it is the thing that we're tracking.
Backgrounds all sort of change, but the humanity in it is the thing that we are tracking. I love that line because that is exactly what I discovered. Well, almost by accident when I started making The Girl Who Wore Freedom, but it's what I discovered. And I keep discovering it all the time when other people watch my film. Like I alluded to before, when I first went to Normandy, I saw something that most people around me, you know, didn't. Everybody around me, when I told them I was going to Normandy, all the other, like, people that knew I was going to do a film, what they saw was the war story, the beaches, the bunkers, the battlefields. They saw D-Day through the lens of combat and strategy and military history. But once I got there, that is not what I saw at all. Maybe because I'm a female, maybe because I'm a mother of soldiers, maybe because I'm a romantic, I don't know. But I didn't see a war story. I saw a love story. I saw a love story between the people of Normandy and the GIs who bled and died for them. I saw bonds that had been built in the chaos of war and somehow had lasted what at that time was 71 years. But for anybody out there who's tracking, this summer is the 82nd anniversary of D-Day, by the way. And there will still be veterans going back and still French people lavishing them with love and thanks. regardless of our politics. I just had to throw that in there. Anyway, back to what I was saying. I wanted to understand those relationships. I wanted to know how a French child of five on D-Day could still weep 7 decades later talking to about the American who gave her chocolate. I wanted to understand what it meant to carry gratitude across a whole lifetime. And I think, honestly, that's what made my film resonate with people. It wasn't the war footage or the historical facts. It was the humanity. Like, people still come up to me and they tell me about specific scenes that they can't forget. And it is never the battle stuff or the famous locations or the monuments. It's never the archival footage. It's always the human moments. Just today, somebody told me about a scene they couldn't shake. There's this veteran in my film. His name is Bob. And he's incredible. He was terrified, like, to go to Normandy and to visit the towns and to meet the people. He had been part of a military group that had bombed Saint-Lô, and it was a town that was really devastated in France. And he had carried that weight for decades. And once he had gotten to Normandy, he was showing up late for all of the events. And when he was questioned by the woman that took him there, he said he was afraid of the French because of what he did to Saint-Lô, all the devastation and the death, and that they would see him as a destroyer and not a liberator. But then one of the wonderful things that often happens in Normandy happened. At one of the ceremonies, an elderly French woman, she was like 80, 81, from Saint-Lô, asked to be introduced to Bob because she wanted to thank him for what he did for her freedom. With the help of the kind English-speaking French woman named Valerie Cardin, who actually started an organization called Veterans Back to Normandy, which raises money to bring veterans back to Normandy so they can be thanked by French people, she approached him. She told him that she knew what he had done. She knew he had destroyed buildings. She knew that people had died. And then she said, "But I'm so thankful for what you did, because I'm free." And in that moment, he was liberated. He was a different person. He danced all night. He was liberated from the oppressive memories that he had been carrying for a lifetime. That's the kind of human moment people don't forget. That's what sticks, not the bombs, not the destruction. The connection between two people who finally understood each other. As filmmakers, we have to prioritize those moments. We have to know what we want people to remember and then build our films around that. Now, after my conversation with Charles, I got curious. He was speaking from experience and intuition, and I had had it too. His was decades in the edit bay, and mine was more recent. But I did want to know, is there actual science behind this? Do we know why certain moments stick in our memories while, like, others fade away, other than, you know, me being old and, you know, getting on in years? Well, I wanted to know, so I did some digging. And, you know, I found some pretty interesting facts. Thanks to some pretty smart people in Chicago. Researchers at the University of Chicago recently published a study in Nature Human Behavior about why emotional experiences are called, in their word, sticky. They found that when we experience something emotionally charged, our brains shift into what they call integrated state. Different regions that usually operate separately start working together in coordination. I was thinking about when I read this, synchronized swimming, sort of. The lead researcher, Wan Chang Long, used this analogy, and I love it. Not synchronized swimming, but he said, think of the brain as an orchestra made up of many different sections. Sometimes they play separately, and other times they come together in harmony, what we call an integrated state. Emotional arousal helps conduct the orchestra, bringing sections together. And when that happens, our memories become more lasting. So when Charles talks about those human moments, those emotionally resonant scenes, he's not just being poetic. He's describing exactly what neuroscience says makes memories permanent. But this is what really got me. There is another study by those really smart people at the University of Chicago as well, that looks at what happens when people watch movies together. They found that during emotionally engaging moments, that viewers' brains actually get this synchronized, not metaphorically, literally. And that's like not literally high school girl, literally, it's actually literally. The neural patterns become similar across different people watching the same scene. And here's the kicker. After watching, participants' memories were similar too, and tied specifically to those engaging emotional moments. Think about what that means for us as filmmakers. Just stop and think about that. When we create a powerful human moment, we are not just telling a story. We are literally synchronizing the brains of our audience. We are creating a shared experience that lodges in the memory the same way for thousands or millions of people. That's amazing. Okay, only two more fascinating pieces of research to go, so stick with me because I'm really bringing everything home, I promise. There was also research from Rice University that found something called gist versus detail trade-off in memory. Now, we don't remember everything equally. Our brains prioritize the central emotional significant elements, the gist, while the peripheral details fade away. I mean, that's not, you know, revolutionary. We kind of know this. Our brains can't possibly remember everything we experience, and so we have to do a little bit of selective forgetting for information that isn't that important. That's what the researcher says. So, your audience is going to forget most of your film. That's not failure. That's just how memory works. So, the question is, have you given them something worth remembering? Have you created human moments powerful enough to survive the brain's natural forgetting process? That's the question. And finally, this one blew my mind a little. Researchers at McGill University found that the way you tell a story actually changes which parts of the brain encode the memory. When you tell a story rich in emotional and conceptual details, feelings, interpretations, the meaning behind what happened, it activates the brain's emotional and interpretive networks. When you focus on sensory details, what things looked like, sounded like, felt like, it engages entirely different pathways. Both create memories, but conceptual emotional storytelling, that's what creates the kind of memories people carry with them, the kind they tell other people about, the kind that change how they see the world. Okay, so what do we do with all this? Well, it's pretty easy, actually. I think Charles gave us the framework. Ask yourself this one very simple question. What do I want people to remember? Not what's the most dramatic footage that I have, not what will look impressive, not what will win me an award, but when someone watches my film and then goes on about their life, what moment do I want surfacing in their mind 6 months from now, a year from now, 10 years from now? Find that moment. Earn that moment. Earn that memory. Build your film around that moment. For me, like you heard, it was the human connections between the people of Normandy and the Americans who liberated them. It was the veteran who finally found peace when the French woman thanked him for destroying her town and setting her free. Those are the scenes people remember. Here's the thing. The science confirms what experienced filmmakers like Charles already know intuitively. Emotional resonance isn't just good storytelling. It's how memory works. When you make someone feel something, you're not just entertaining them. You're literally changing their brain. You're creating neural pathways that will fire again and again when they think about your film. You say all the time, I want to make something that changes people. This is how you do it. That is the power that we have. And it is a great responsibility. So, the next time that you're in the edit bay, or you're on set, or you're reviewing footage, stop and ask yourself, is this a moment that will stick? Is this the humanity that I want people to carry with them? Because Charles is right. People will watch your movie for an infinitesimally small percentage of their life. What matters is what they remember. That's it for this episode of Documentary First, The Deep Dive. If you want to hear my full conversation with Charles Oliver about editing Surviving Ohio State and working with George Clooney, and why he structures documentaries like symphonies, check episode 270 of the main Documentary First podcast. And if this episode had resonated with you, I'd love to hear about it. What are the moments from documentaries that stuck with you? The scenes that you still think about years later? Drop me a message. I might feature you in some of your responses in a future episode. Until next time, keep telling the stories that matter and rewire people's brains. I'm Christian Taylor. Thanks for diving in with me. Hey, everybody. This podcast is brought to you by Documentary First Productions, and we need your support so that we can keep preserving history. If you could go over and grab some merch or watch our films at documentaryfirst.com, you'll help us keep making awesome documentaries and sharing the stories that matter, and also bring amazing filmmakers and their wonderful films to the world. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you for visiting documentaryfirst.com.